This is The Full Story. I'm Tom Kooser. We're dedicating the next few broadcasts to WSHU's original podcast, Everytown, The Hamptons. WSHU's Charles Lane spent more than a year reporting on the residents of a rundown motel in Hampton Bays on Long Island. They were the target of a campaign to essentially throw them out of their homes. Last week, we left off in the middle of Episode 2, Something East of the Canal. A group of neighbors began to collect information on the residents of the Bel Air Cove Motel, their goal to gather evidence of overcrowding violations, then use that to get the town to shut the property down. We jump back into the story with Joyce King, a former member of the Concerned Citizens of Hampton Bays. She told Charles how the group collected that data.
I had worked mail fraud for a number of years and knew how to put numbers together and how to process data, and I did.
Joyce's plan is to pressure the town, get them to ramp up code enforcement by outlining exactly how widespread overcrowding is.
We talked about pollution. We talked about hotels being allowed to...
Joyce combs through tax records. She has people driving around town and texting her addresses with possible signs of overcrowding.
We would take pictures of four antennas on top of a two-bedroom house. We would take pictures of six mailboxes in front of a two-bedroom house.
Pictures. CCHB was conducting surveillance. Erica told me about kids living at the Bel Air and how they'd come home in tears because of this, that they were afraid to go to school.
People told me that they either saw people following school buses and photographing children, or that they did, in fact, do this.
Again, not to my knowledge at all, and that none of those pictures were ever sent to me.
Here's what I know so far. The people at the Bel Air say someone is taking pictures of kids. Mike Dunn says photographing kids isn't part of the official CCHB campaign. What is part of the official CCHB campaign, according to Joyce, is taking photos of people's homes. You're going to have to work this into your own personal creepy scale. For Joyce, photographing kids is inappropriate, but counting them is okay.
It wasn't so much let's count the children. What the issue was, let's look at an address that we know has students, which is fine, but if the population of that address exceeds the number of people permitted by law to live there, then we needed to raise an issue with people. We
actually found, to me, the logic here is a bit difficult to parse. Joyce is saying it's not about counting the kids, yet she also says it's the number of children overwhelming the school and making her taxes go up. Purely from a PR perspective, that seems like a difficult argument to make. She's saying, your kids are fine, just not the cost to educate them. Still, that's Joyce's plan. She creates a folder for each overcrowded house. She gets so many folders that she has to run to Staples to buy milk crates to store them. One milk crate turns into two and then three. Her portrait of overcrowding in Hampton Bays grows until she has six milk crates stacked in her study.
Okay, you're talking about like a huge, like you're gonna make your case to the town. Like you had a folder with pictures and...
We had folders for over 300 homes. And there was a thought process that possibly someday we could just wheel them into town hall and say, here, we have a problem.
CCHB gets a meeting at town hall. Joyce leaves the milk crates at home and instead prints out spreadsheets. She, along with Mike, hand them around the room. There's maybe 12 or 16 people there, all seated around a conference table.
Mike just put together information, explained why we were there, explained what he saw.
Mike takes the lead. He explains the case. Joyce watches. The town officials, they shrug.
Have you ever watched a politician's facial expressions? They're pretty neutral. They wait for you to finish, and then they give you a very neutral line that says nothing.
And that's I guess, what happened?
Oh, we heard a lot of nothing.
All this data entry, the milk crates stacked in her study, the meetings, fundraisers, this community that Joyce loved, it was all met with a hollow thud.
They would just all say, yes, we'll look into that. That's a good point. well, telling me I raised a good point and you're going to look into it doesn't tell me anything. Tell me what you'd like to do about it. Tell me to come back in 3 weeks and we'll have further discussions and you'll have some recommendations. None of that ever occurred.
People told me that after these meetings, Mike felt dejected, that he wanted to quit. Joyce, she did quit.
And we sold the house in Hampton Bays in 2014. And the reason we sold it is that we were going to be taxed out of the place. We knew that. The taxes just kept going up and up.
Joyce ends up moving 20 minutes down the road. Her new house is gorgeous. There's an outdoor kitchen next to a pool and an immaculate lawn. In fact, the landscapers just showed up to mow it. The main difference is she no longer pays for the kids at the Bel Air. She still pays the same in taxes. It's just now she has a nicer house.
What is like a... But you get flowers.
I don't know.
Thank you very much.
Who is that from?
I don't know. You got flowers, girl.
No, I didn't.
You heard Tiffany Scarlato in the last episode. She used to be the Southampton town attorney. Now she's in private practice doing high-end real estate where clients send flowers after transactions. I wanted to get her take on these meetings that Joyce was in. Also, there's this nagging question of why is the Bel Air closing if Joyce and Mike's meeting with the town was such a bust? It turns out CCHB actually had a number of meetings with town officials.
Was there a woman there by the name of Joyce King?
Not that I recall. Although I do recall that name.
Tiffany was sometimes there. Actually, she might have been one of those placid-faced politicians that Joyce spoke so unkindly of.
The tone was rather hostile from the very beginning.
From Tiffany's view, Mike isn't asking the town for help. He's demanding it.
I think it was pretty apparent that I was slightly uncomfortable with the methodology that they were using for counting people in houses and how they were extrapolating that information from the number of children that got on a bus.
And then how did he respond?
This is the number of people that are living in the house. Fix it.
But beyond Mike's tone, Tiffany has issues with the very core of CCHB's mission.
I think the interesting part of the story is the metamorphosis of the organization and its real motivations.
Because she says that their issue wasn't actually about overcrowding or code enforcement or even taxes.
And it became clear that there was an undercurrent there that it wasn't necessarily about taxes all the time, and that it was about a certain segment of the community there.
Well, to be honest, I don't know if that undercurrent is as clear to me as it is to you. So how is it? What made it clear to you?
The types of houses that were on the list, there, I don't recall there being any white families on that list.
Another signal was at a public meeting where CCHB laid out their agenda before the town board.
A community member actually stood up and said, I don't know why we can't just give these people $100 each and put them on a bus and drop them.
Someone, possibly a member of CCHB, asked the town board why they couldn't send Latino immigrants to another town on Long Island.
And it became very apparent to me at that point that it was not necessarily about taxes. Because what they were saying was basically, gather up all of those people, put them on a bus, and see how you like it out on your end of the island.
Just to reiterate, this is Tiffany's opinion. I've spoken with lots of members of CCHB who categorically refute the idea that they're a bunch of racists. But I went home to watch for myself this public hearing that she was talking about.
Thank you, Town Board.
You're up.
Thank you, Town Board. My name is Michael Dunn. I'm the president of the Concerned Citizens of Hampton Bays and co-chair of the Hampton Bay CAC.
This is actually the first time I've seen Mike. He looks like someone who has swung a lot of hammers in his life. He's wearing a button-up shirt with a misshaped collar. He stands at the podium reading from a script. He seems frustrated. Behind him, stretching through the audience gallery and out the front door, are dozens of other CCHB members waiting for their turn.
About 2.5 years ago, our CCHB group provided the town with the first of two detailed spreadsheets They clearly showed the abuses that we are facing. We had monthly meetings with the
As I watch, I lean in. I keep an eye out for what Tiffany says, that at any moment someone could say something that shows the group's true intentions, what CCHB is really about. But Mike sticks to his script. It's just about taxes, overcrowded homes, town codes going unenforced. Same for the next guy who comes to the podium.
Well, when I first came here, my taxes were half of what they are now, and that's 12 years ago. When is it going to stop?
One woman gestures her hand in frustration at the loss of collaboration between the town of Southampton and Hampton Bays. The next man is so fed up with this divide that he says people are ready for armed rebellion, but he says it with a shrug, as if what he's really saying is, you don't care about us.
All this, if the town decides they don't want to enforce the laws, maybe there should be a way that they can compensate Hampton Bays for supporting all the illegals that are living in our town and are going and taking advantage of our...
A couple of other people refer to immigrants as illegals or aliens, words that most consider offensive. I wonder if this is when the hairs start to rise on the back of Tiffany's neck.
And do you know what your scores are going to be in Hampton Bays? Probably amongst the lowest in the country, because they don't speak English.
Then there's John. He's tall and trim, glasses, mid-60s. Whereas everyone else reads from a script, John is waving his arms around and putting on a show, like it's his own Thanksgiving Day dinner table. I think he might be the guy who Tiffany said wants to bus immigrants out of town.
If this board doesn't act quickly, I think some of these people might just contribute to a few buses, and we could bring in some homeless from New York City and Philadelphia. Give them a week in the Hamptons, Sag Harbor, Bridge Hill. Just turn them loose in the street. Give them $100 each. I could afford that. I don't mind doing that, and they'll smell real good. And when the tourists come in...
I've re-listened to this clip a number of times, trying to make sense of it. I think Tiffany misremembers it. I don't think he's talking about shipping immigrants. I think he's making a threat. I think he's saying that if anyone should pay more in taxes to support immigrants, it should be the wealthy, the people who hire the immigrants as nannies and landscapers. If this doesn't happen, and this is his threat, he'll bus homeless people into their neighborhoods. This threat may sound a little bizarre, but it's actually quite revealing. It suggests that he sees undocumented immigrants as dirtying Hampton Bays.
They drive down the street with their pickup trucks. They throw their beer cans on the lawns. They throw their McDonald's and their other stuff. And we have to pick it up. Me and my neighbors go out with bags and pick up the garbage once a week. I'm sick of that. And then I got to pay to dump it.
Of everyone who spoke, this guy ventured furthest into xenophobia. He was an outlier, but he also received applause.
Have a nice day.
Eve Houlihan, Hampton Bays. Good evening. This somehow seems...
A lot of people in the Hamptons are embarrassed by CCHB. They call them racist and xenophobic. Their argument is you can't just call an entire group of people dirty. But if this is all you're looking for, I think you're going to miss a really interesting part of CCHB's argument. It even has a name, the Shinnecock Canal. This 40-foot gap of water connects the Peconic Bay to the north with the Atlantic Ocean to the south. It also splits the town of Southampton in more ways than one. It's quiet, sheltered from the wind.
Hola. ¿Puedo grabar la sonida de tu equipo?
Okay.
Here, on the west side of the canal, a lot of families come to fish.
That's why I like to come here. It's quiet. You can stay here to midnight, you know.
It doesn't draw the typical wealthy Hampton tourists. Although, to get here, you do have to drive through their golf course. And you can see their estates in the distance, across the canal, on the east side. The houses are so massive, they look like they're floating on the water. People often refer to the Shinnecock Canal as an imperfect analogy for class divide in the Hamptons. To the west, you have the workers and the middle class. To the east, you have the wealthy. One side has the Bel Air, the other side has the mansions. The mansions attract workers with jobs. A lot of them come from Central America. But the houses across the canal, they don't pay to educate the children. Even though they bring in the workers, they technically aren't part of Hampton Bay's tax base. The Shinnecock Canal paints a more complicated picture of wealth in the Hamptons. It's not as attention-grabbing as simply calling CCHB a bunch of racists, but it does hint at just how deep this divide over the Bel Air and immigration really is.
How are you today? Looking for Dennis in Maryland?
Yeah.
You're Dennis?
Yeah.
Okay. My name's Charles Rain.
Marylinda and Dennis Viana live on the west side of Shinnecock Canal. They used to be members of CCHB, and I found their names at the bottom of a box of petitions that the group submitted to Town Hall. One day, I show up in their front yard while Dennis is raking leaves.
A lot of people thought we were against the immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, what we were looking at was why the school taxes were so high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were fighting.
Then Marylinda comes out the front door. She looks like a boomer version of punk, with spiky gray hair and purple eyeglasses.
Well, we don't mind these people. I'm going to say these people. You know, everybody's trying to get through in life.
At this point, I still have no clue how CCHB went from getting dismissed by the town to getting the Bel Air closed. So I'm trying to entice both Dennis and Marylinda to do an interview to help fill in these gaps.
You know, I have run across a lot of bigotry around here, but I don't think that's the complete story. And so that's the story I'm trying to tell.
I mean, who's really being bigoted is over there.
Marylinda lifts her hand and points east across the canal.
Because they're the NIMBYs. Not in my backyard. Take them all in, right?
Yeah.
Let them work for cheap labor. Send them back here.
Part of the reason
for us to educate them.
Eventually, the Viennas invite me into their home, and they tell me the reason why they joined CCHB. To Dennis, it was like the town of Southampton was only paying attention to the east side of the canal.
Over the years, it just seems like they treat Hampton Bays as second-class citizens.
For the Viennas, this feeling of neglect predates the Bel Air.
Sometimes at the board meetings, they're asleep, you know, when we get up there. I do. Or they shake their head. They just shake their heads, yes, but nothing ever gets accomplished.
Yeah, you feel voiceless, is that?
Yes, absolutely.
The Viennas say that the only voice that the town does listen to is on the east side of the canal.
And all of the politicians, you know, the Pelosi's and the Maxine Waters who've gotten theirs, okay.
They lump the liberal elites in with the people on the east side of the canal, the celebrities and the CEOs who give the Hamptons its reputation of wealth and power.
And that's what's going on. So as long as you live in a lily-white community, you are happy.
So for the Viennas, CCHB was a last-ditch effort to get the town's attention.
And that's probably what demoralized a lot of people, even Mike, I think.
Mm-hmm,
he put a lot of time and effort in. And
when that didn't work, when they got shot down as being a bunch of racists, Dennis says Mike came up with a new idea. He was going to run for the school board.
I think Mike decided it on his own, and then when he came...
This is significant, because up until this point, CCHB had to fund its own campaign out of their own pockets.
So we didn't have a lot of information, and we thought, Mike, this is a good idea, get on the school board and, you know...
He wins. Suddenly, Mike's not voiceless anymore. He has a school district, the school's lawyers, a $40 million budget, and the Bel Air as a target.
That is episode number 2 of Everytown. Next up, episode 3, the second campaign. The concerned citizens of Hampton Bays fail in their first attempt to close down the Bel Air Cove Motel. So, they try it again.
The evening is my favorite time here at the Bel Air. The insects, the breeze off the water. Everyone is more relaxed, more open.
Hey, how are you? Can I come in?
I still have so many unanswered questions about why the people are being evicted, who's doing it, and how. But also, and this is big, what's going to happen to the people who live here? People like Carmen.
Remember, we're not using last names.
Yes.
Right. But can you introduce yourself? Say, my name is, and then...
Carmen is undocumented, so I won't be using her last name.
My name is Carmen. I'm 37 years old. I have 2 kids, 12 and 7 years old. And I'm single mother. And what else?
How long have you been living?
Carmen's apartment is small, but it's nice. She has a fireplace and a fish tank. Pictures of her 2 sons line wood-paneled walls painted a sea green. A lot of people who talk about the Bel Air talk about how disgusting the place is. Elected officials call it unfit for human habitation or rodent-infested. On the one hand, this simply isn't true. On the other, it dehumanizes the people who live here as if they don't have stories.
I came in 2000 just for vacation, and I say, oh my God, I like it.
Carmen was born in Costa Rica, and for the longest time, she had no intention of leaving home.
And I say, okay, I want to try. I want to go. And I came in 2002, and this year, now it's 70 years. Yeah.
It's actually her family who keeps texting her.
Your first job was cleaning houses when you first came?
Yes. And then I work in Dunkin' Donuts here in Hampton Bays.
Carmen went from cleaning to register to managing the store in the afternoon. She even learned English from her boss.
My chief, he called me to the office and told me, sit here. He put me in the computer to read it a little bit and try to speak with him. That's so nice.
He taught you English?
She would leave the Dunkin' Donuts and drive down the street to the Bel Air, where she knew everyone, relied on them.
Like is they're like a family. If I need rice or oil or something, just I know I can go to apartments and I can and I just asking.
The other residents would watch each other's kids. Diego, Carmen's youngest, is on the floor now playing cards and listening to us talk. He shows me his brother's fish.
I had that big one for when
I was. That's the other thing that this country has given Carmen. A family.
Sometimes my mom say, you forgot Costa Rica. I say, no, I born there. But this country give me all the best I have.
Carmen and all of her neighbors, they all work directly or indirectly for the wealthy who summer in the Hamptons. It's easy to find work.
But the hard thing now is try to find another place because Hampton Bays is full. We know Hampton Bays is full.
Hampton Bays is the working class bedroom community to the Hamptons. It's expensive, but Carmen's search for a new place is hard for an entirely different reason. Her children.
But I still call and he said, okay, that's fine. You can come. How many people? And I just write, it's me and 2 kids, 1 12, 1 7. I'm working. He said, oh, kids, no, I'm sorry, no kids. Can you... So I don't know, what can I do? Every place I call, they're saying no kids.
I've heard this before. a lot, actually, but only from Latinas. It has to do with the housing market in the Hamptons. There's plenty of mansions, and there are some middle-class apartments in the $2,000 range. But for people like Carmen, who work for the wealthy, the only viable option is unlicensed apartments advertised on Facebook.
But you've never talked to these people. Do you know anybody who talks to them? Or is it
only by text, only by messenger. That is all.
I spent months asking about this, and I was never able to find a landlord willing to speak with me. The best answer I got comes from Ricardo Larios, the Southampton Town Code Enforcer. He says because apartments have to be licensed by the town, the cheaper, unlicensed apartments try to stay hidden. Renting to families with children draws attention. Attention from the school. Attention from Mike Dunn in CCHB.
Do you know about the Concerned Citizens of Hampton Bays? Do you that group?
I know there is a group. They don't like this place, mostly in special because they're renting for...
I start thinking about CCHB sitting outside and counting the children. I thought that Mike Dunn and his group CCHB hit a dead end with town officials. I learned that Mike joined the school board, but I haven't figured out what happened after that.
For real, I don't know. I don't know too much about that because, you know, when we are like in my position, we want to make like invisible, you know, for any problem or something like that.
She's invisible, but she still sees what goes on around her, especially the online comments in the local newspaper where people incorrectly assume that everyone at the Bel Air is undocumented.
This is very, you know, racist.
Racist, yeah.
So this is the supposed to be country of the opportunities. And we feel like every time, you know, it's hard. Because it's not easy sometimes when we find persons, they think all the Spanish people are the same, or they are all bad people. And sometimes just we want to come and try to make a better life there in our countries. And for me now it's hard because I'm single mother, and not have the big account bank. And it's hard because I don't know what can I do. I just thinking if they say, okay, you don't have more time. What about if the sheriff want to come and close? And I don't have the place to go and what happened with my kids and with me? So it's hard because everything is coming together.
In listening to Carmen, something comes into focus for me about landlords possibly being afraid of the school district.
Oh, no. Buenas noches.
I remember Eric Yolate, the Bel Air's property manager, mentioning something to me in passing. It has to do with the evictions, but not so much about the actual notices, about the guy who dropped them off.
¿Tienes tiempo? I mean, do you have time?
Sí, sí tengo tiempo. Yes, I have time.
I stop by to ask him about it again. He's sitting at his dinner table while his kids bounce around the room. They all just finished eating.
He say, well, you have to leave this place by this chance and by this time, and we are giving you a lot of time to leave. And I say, no, this is not enough time.
The guy who dropped off the eviction notices, his name is Kevin Springer. And what's so interesting about Kevin is he's also the president of the school board in Hampton Bays. At the same time he's managing the education of Eric's kids, he's also serving them eviction notices.
This is more than good because if we want, we can put you tomorrow out of this place. I rage up against him and I say, what the hell are you talking about? What is this?
And the way Kevin is doing it really bothers Eric. Kevin's serving evictions with a smile.
I don't know what the word is like.
Do you know the word gloating?
Gloating?
Almost like he's happy that you have to leave?
Exactly. That is the right word. Exactly. Like showing off. Like, you have to leave this place. Finally, you have to leave. That is what I got from him. The attitude that he had, you know, like feeling that proud because, like, they finally made it. Like, he finally conquered whatever the goal that they wanted.
He apparently does the same thing to all of the tenants at the property. He bangs on doors while people are showering. This school board president even delivers the notices in front of children. Carmen calls him nasty.
I was really upset because everything that he was doing, he was with that attitude. He was telling the kids things that he shown. He just had to come and give the papers and that's it without saying anything. He was saying he was coming from the part of the town and this and that.
So I start calling Kevin or leaving messages for him. What's odd is that Kevin's name never came up when I started asking about the Bel Air. He never signs any petitions. He never goes to any CCHB meetings. He never speaks out against the Bel Air. As my emails and voicemails pile up, I do a search on Kevin. His company, Dynamic Legal Services, has a Facebook page. His services appear to run the gamut between running court errands to, quote, investigation services. He's started a blizzard of other LLCs. The only news clip I find on him is from when he ran for the school board. His main goal, according to the article, is to keep taxes down. All that said, I really don't know much about him, which for a school board president is kind of strange. Finally.
Kevin speaking.
Hey, Kevin, this is Charles Lane, the reporter with WSJ.
Kevin says he's been busy. That's why he never called me back. Still, I sense
now?
Reluctance.
Well, let me ask you a question. Who are you reporting with?
WSHU?
So I start telling him about the story I'm doing, the Bel Air and the town codes and the divide between the east side of the Shinnecock Canal and the Hampton Bays side. As I'm doing this, Kevin says something that grabs my attention.
I'm trying to be polite in this, but a lot of people call Hampton Bays the armpit of Southampton. And I don't know if I offend people when I say that or not. And I find
well,
that
we have a large Hispanic population now.
My brain screeches to a stop here. Hampton Bays is the armpit of Southampton. Because Hispanic people live here. I really want to talk to Kevin now, and I push for an in-person meeting.
Okay, do you think this afternoon we can meet up?
You can try me again. I'm pretty full for the day, but I don't know. It depends on what this weather does, so I might have some time in the afternoon.
It takes a while to pin Kevin down, but we do finally meet, and in a supreme example of dim-wittedness, I suggest meeting at the Hampton Bays train station.
Then it was rentals.
Not the best location for an interview, but I make do. Kevin is leaned against a white Ford SUV. He's tallish, work jeans and a gray t-shirt, graying brown beard. He looks a little bit like Hugh Jackman in Wolverine. Outwardly, I don't pick up on the gloating monster that Eric makes him out to be. But before I even have a chance to ask, he says, yeah, he served evictions on the Bel Air.
I've helped get them out through some of the local attorneys. I've done some serving of some summonses.
Kevin adamantly denies being rude about the evictions. He says there were no arguments at all. In fact, he says he went out of his way to offer advice to the residents. He says he was just doing a favor for the lawyer. I nod my head and jot all of this down in my notebook. Then Kevin goes on basically repeating CCHB's argument about unfair taxes in Southampton and the town ignoring Hampton
because
Bays.
This is where the workers come from. This is the blue collar, that's the white collar.
He points his head towards the Shinnecock Canal. So,
how does that make you feel?
I don't have a problem with these people. I just have a problem with the system. So they have to live somewhere.
You know, and it's not, listen, it's not all just Hispanic people either. You know, it's white people. It's everybody. It's just, it's, you know,
Kevin says that he used to talk to CCHB a lot, but he was never a member because he wanted to keep a line of separation between them and the school. Still, he agrees with their campaign about taxes, especially when it comes to the cost of educating students.
If you figure at a lean minimum, we figure $23,000 to $24,000 to teach a child. That's basically our basis, which is very, very low. It's one of the lowest around by far, but that's what we have to do because if...
Per year.
Yeah. But then you have these kids that are ESL and... You know, that which is English as a second language. And then
for Kevin, English as a second language raises costs, raises taxes. Not having places like the Bel Air would reduce the number of ESL kids. Having fewer ESL kids would reduce taxes. All of this is running through my head as Kevin talks.
The numbers just, they just go through the roof. So that 23,000 becomes, it could become 50, it could become 100.
Then Kevin mentioned something interesting. The school is suing the town over the Bel Air, but he doesn't want to talk about it.
Right, because I just can't answer.
What is the status of it, though? Do you...
It's pending, but, you know, they've made little moves like this. Is to, you know, to...
This lawsuit piques my interest, especially if Mike Dunn had something to do with it. I really want to get Kevin someplace quieter so we could talk.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
We plan to schedule something by phone, but he never answers my calls. So I switch gears.
Here for the board meeting?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, a little early, but that's good. It's 7. Do you know that?
I show up for a school board meeting. Kevin will be here. I can meet the other board members, too, and maybe figure out why the Bel Air is closing. Maybe learn something about these lawsuits. And what happened while Mike was on the school board.
I'll tell you later.
The meeting is in the school cafeteria. Homecoming murals hang on the walls. The board members all come in at the same time from a side door. They sit at a long table at the front of the room. There's 5 of them, all white. They rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. The parents and the kids in the audience are almost entirely Latino. They're here for the first item on the board's agenda, a Student of the Month ceremony. The first person called up is a 4th grader named Alejandra.
And why she's such an amazing student, and it's been so exciting to watch her grow and develop over the years, is that when Ms. Denaglia first had her, she didn't speak any English, not at all. And over the years, she's worked on...
About 60% of the students in this district are Hispanic. Stories like Alejandra's are common. Kevin smiles at all the right times, but it's strange seeing him up there. I keep thinking about him delivering evictions in front of Eric and Carmen's kids. I wonder if he ever delivered evictions to some of the students now getting awards. The presentation's finished. All of the parents and children file out of the room. The board, way up at the front of the cafeteria, plows through the rest of the agenda. In a sea of empty chairs, it's just me, a rep from the teachers' union, and a college student taking notes for school paper.
Blessedly short meeting, then, huh?
After the meeting, I try to chat up some of the other board members.
You can't what?
Speak with you.
About football, baseball?
But they all decline.
Okay, Kevin, it looks like it's just you and me.
Okay, you can try me tomorrow, but like I said, after that...
He wants me to try his voicemail again. Instead, I stand there, stupidly, trying to squeeze out more information about these lawsuits surrounding the Bel Air.
I spoke to the attorney for that just the other day about that. So I know that claim. The town claim is, you know, we can't really discuss that.
That's what school council told you as well, that it's pending litigation, so we really can't comment on it further than what's in the notice.
The person who just jumped in is Lars Clemenson, the school superintendent. He tells me the same thing that Kevin tells me. They won't talk because of the lawsuits surrounding the Bel Air.
The atmosphere here is very defensive, and I'm a little bit surprised.
if it, you're sensing a little hostility, it's because we are being honest with what we can say to you, and you're not taking that in good faith. You're going to try to find other places to get into the system. And we are not commenting on pending litigation.
You're describing it as like I'm some sort of invader.
No, not at all. Not at all. But when we can't comment, you're putting people in a position who don't have the authority to speak.
This goes on for another 10 minutes. Lars and Kevin aren't opening a bit about the lawsuits. Why is it so important to keep the school's involvement in the Bel Air secret?
Okay, so now I understand that you can't talk about the notice of claim. Can we talk about these other things?
Yes. So call Deirdre Gilligan tomorrow, and we will set up a time to talk. You have my word on that.
Okay. Turns out his word has conditions. I emailed the school's press officer like he wanted. She responded that she would take my list of questions and have Kevin respond. I wanted an in-person interview, but they wouldn't agree. So I went knocking on doors, trying to get others to talk, but still, nothing. And if no one's going to talk, then the only way I can get through all of these secrets would be to use the Freedom of Information Law and ask for public records. I end up submitting some 50 Freedom of Information requests. I gather the school is pretty irritated with me. On one request, the assistant superintendent writes back, quote, "I have no desire to speak to you. Please follow proper channels and do not contact me again." I show the assistant superintendent the board minutes, indicating him as the proper channel. He sends me the documents. In his defense, though, I did ask for a lot. Emails and phone logs, legal invoices, expense reports, calendars. The school said at one point that I had asked for 20,000 emails. Maybe, I don't know, because they still haven't given me everything yet. The school actually denied a lot of my requests. At one point, I had to get lawyers involved. I sued the school. Finally, they send me some of what I asked for. Altogether, the documents that I receive show the school behind the scenes, in lockstep with CCHB's effort to close down multiple hotels like the Bel Air. The school's part of the campaign starts by drafting legal memos in support of CCHB's main claim that motels like the Bel Air are illegal. The school's argument, identical to CCHB's claim, is that places like the Bel Air aren't designed for living there full time. They're not meant for families, they're small, there's no full kitchen. The sewer system wasn't designed for things like washing clothes and washing dishes. Courts have ruled against CCHB's interpretation of this law. Still, Lars, the superintendent, and Mike Dunn are meeting more frequently. Lars attends a CCHB fundraiser, then he gives CCHB statistics on the number of children living at each address, hand-delivers them, in fact, twice. At the same time that the school is feeding this information to Mike and CCHB, it's also sending the information to the town. The school is pressing Southampton to send code enforcement officers to the homes of students. This information comes from the emails that the school is still refusing to release to me. I had to get them from somewhere else. The emails state that the school is concerned about possible overcrowding. The school's desired solution is to have the homes of its students, investigated. For Carmen, this has her worried to tears about being homeless. For the school, this is the beginning of a pressure campaign for money.
How are you guys today?
We're good. We're trying to land the plane on a school year.
After I piece together all of the school's involvement with the Bel Air, they finally agree to an interview. At the time, New York is under stay-at-home orders because of the pandemic. I'm in my living room. From the looks of it, Kevin is at his breakfast table and Lars is in a bedroom office. The school's lawyer is also on the call.
In a couple of the emails that I've read,
You said that this the notice of claim was to put pressure on the town.
Yeah, to start the conversation. Pressure, start the conversation. And then the ask to the town of Southampton was a pilot or a payment or something that would redistribute the money to the taxpayer.
Lars says the pressure campaign, the tighter and tighter integration between the school and CCHB, it's all because of unequal taxes in the Hamptons.
Our tax base is two or three bedroom ranch style houses. They generate property taxes that just pale in comparison.
What Lars is saying is that his school district has small houses, small tax revenue. East of the canal, there are mansions, huge tax revenue.
I have neighbors who cut the bowling team when I had to change the mileage marker for kindergarten transportation. When I cut, it's bone. When some of my neighbors cut, it's enriching activities for their children. There's the thrust. That's what gets me upset. That's what gets our board of
education. This is the divide, the Shinnecock Canal. Some kids lose bowling. Other kids lose their ride to school.
That is what gets us emotional. That's what gets us upset. That when my kids leave the commencement tent, that they have every opportunity that their neighbors had because their community was able to afford it better than my community was.
Next week, the story becomes more involved as residents question who's responsible for paying to educate the children of their immigrant neighbors. And the town gets hit with a lawsuit to close down the Bel Air Cove Motel. Every Town was produced by Max Wasserman, edited by Ann Lopez, and reported by Charles Lane. So what do you think of Everytown so far? Let us know. We'd like to hear from you. You can email us at tfs@wshu.org, and we're on Twitter at FullStoryWSHU. And that's it for the Full Story for today. Produced by Fatou Sangare and senior producer Ann Lopez, I'm Tom Kuser. Thank you for listening to the Full Story.